the Spirit of Jazz podcast, where music dances with mystery, with your hosts, Bill Carter and Jeff Kellum.
Welcome to the Spirit of Jazz. This is Bill Carter, and this is our special Holy Week edition.
Hi, I'm Jeff Kellum. We're looking at the week of Passion, which is an interesting word to apply to all the things that happen in Holy Week.
Well, and some of our listeners are probably curious, what in the world are you doing? A Holy Week edition of a jazz podcast? What does jazz have to do with Holy Week? And what does jazz have to do with pain? And what does jazz have to do with remembrance of suffering?
Yeah. And then there's that whole idea of jazz and blues, which has expressed pain, the passion, the suffering, not only, of course, of romantic entanglements or justice issues, but now we can look at how jazz expresses this religious pilgrimage through a week when many Christians would rather just kind of go from Palm Sunday to Easter and stop.
Yeah. I go back to that chart I saw of Mary Lou Williams saying that all jazz, like the trunk of a tree, the roots are in suffering. You know, whether it was the suffering of enslavement or the suffering of poverty or racial oppression, there is a deep resonance with this music and pain. So, Jeff, a number of years ago, a church near Philadelphia invited the Presby Bop Quartet down to do, of all things, a Vespers for Good Friday.
Yeah.
Would you ever consider this? And I said, absolutely. Got off the phone, had no idea what we would do. Thought we would put together a bunch of musical pieces and pair them with maybe some psalms of lament.
Yeah.
And so let's hear a little bit of a psalm of lament. This is a Psalm 9. It's a psalm that says, ultimately, there will be justice. And there's a story behind it, which I'll tell afterwards.
Okay.
Thank you. tune is called The Last Word, and I dedicate it to a friend by the name of Brent, who was unjustly condemned and saw no way out. And the psalm also says, you know, God will have the last word on all this difficulty we face, all this pain. It's a very powerful tune. People who befriended Brent and knew of his story are very moved by it.
Talk a little bit about the instruments and how, what they contribute to that.
There's a soprano sax, and it's a plaintive kind of sound that just goes straight to the spinal cord. And then Tony Marino on that bass, his strings just vibrate and hum and flutter. So that's, you know, I think that's where we begin, just a commonality with people who are in pain and difficulty and not rushing by that.
We are forced to deal with it. And as you listen to it, I was thinking of the bass and how that touches a deep place, and not a play on words. It touches a deep place within us. Invites us to look at our own lives and to see how we've come through some very difficult times personally.
Right. It may still be bearing the weight of those times. A friend of mine was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer maybe 15 years ago now. And I was there shortly after he received the diagnosis, which would take his life within a year or so. And he's a therapist and very much in touch with his own emotions, and particularly this ultimate emotion. And he just simply said, everybody gets their turn. This is mine. And to face the end with courage and commitment, conviction, and to infuse his remaining moments and relationships with as much love as he could. It was remarkable.
Yeah. So you take this personal music and apply it more generally to the week that Christians are dealing with in terms of Monday, Thursday, Good Friday. Now it's a more cosmic event.
That's right. That's right. We did an album almost 20 years ago, and it was kind of intriguing even for us. We brought in a biblical storyteller, Dennis Dewey, who would tell spontaneous versions of a Bible story, and the band would play along, sometimes inventing, sometimes playing something I had composed or scripted. And a very powerful piece, a Good Friday piece. We called it on the album, Who's on Trial? And it's drawing from the Gospel of John, where Pontius Pilate is putting Jesus on trial, but Pilate is the one who's exposed.
Yeah.
Let's give that a listen.
They led Jesus to the Praetorium. It was early. They themselves did not enter the Praetorium in order that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. Pilate came out and said to them, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered, "If he were a criminal, would we be handing him over to you?" Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." They answered, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." So Pilate entered the Praetorium, and he called Jesus to him, and he said, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Are you saying this yourself, or because others have said this about me?" Pilate said, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus said, "My kingship is not of this world. If my kingship were of this world, my disciples would fight to set me free. But my kingship is not of this world." Pilate said, "So you are a king." Jesus said to him, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this purpose I came into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Those who are of the truth hear my voice." Pilate said, What is truth? When Pilate had spoken these words, he went out and said to them, I find no crime in him, but you have a custom that I should release to you one prisoner for the feast. Will you have me release to you the king of the Jews? But they cried out, Not this man, but Barabbas! Now Barabbas was a robber. So Pilate took Jesus and had him whipped. And the soldiers wove a crown of thorns and set it on him. And they dressed him in a purple robe. And coming up to him, they said, Hail, King of the Jews! And they struck him in the face. Again, Pilate came out and said to them, You see, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no crime in him. And Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, Look at the man. When they saw him, they cried out, Crucify him! Crucify him! Pilate said to them, Take him yourselves and crucify him. I find no crime in him. They answered, We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he's made himself out to be the Son of God. When Pilate heard these words, he became more frightened. Again, he entered the praetorium and said to Jesus, Where are you from? But Jesus was silent. Pilate said to him, Will you not answer me? Do you not understand that I have the power to crucify you or to release you? Jesus answered, You would have no power over me unless it had been given to you from above. Again, Pilate sought to release him, but they cried out, If you release this man, you're no friend of Caesar's. Anyone who claims to be a king sets himself up against Caesar. When Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out, and he sat down in the judgment seat in the place called the pavement, in Hebrew, Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation. It was about noon, and Pilate said to them, Look, your king. They cried out, Take him away! Take him away and crucify him! Pilate said, Shall I crucify your king? They shouted, We have no king but Caesar! So Pilate handed Jesus over to be crucified.
So that's called Who's on Trial, and the musicians are playing not off the printed page, but are improvising.
That's exactly right. I said, okay, guys, here's what's going to happen. I need a little bit of like martial drumming, and I need some odd sounds.
Yeah.
And we're going to proceed with kind of a textural improvisation to accompany the reading. And one of the guys said, what's the story? And I said, the story is Jesus is being put on trial and condemned to death. And they kind of looked at me and said, that's heavy. I said, let's do it. And in a single take, that's what we did.
Wow, man.
Holy Week is not a popular week in America anymore. I don't know if it's our prevailing optimism, are convincing ourselves everything automatically turns out all right, or what it is. Just as a lot of folks don't want a lot of demands on their imagination when they listen to music.
We want to be entertained by music, and yeah, not necessarily inspired or provoked, mm-hmm, or even comforted. Maybe we want to be comforted, but you wouldn't say, I'm going to listen to this because I need some comfort. You're kind of forcing this music on us, Bill.
Yes, I am. Because the authentic spiritual life is an authentic human life. It's It's all that we experience and encounter. It's just not the happy, happy, joy, joy stuff. It's the sadness, the grief, the pain as well.
So you said before, if a church has a praise band, they ought to have a lament band. And so
the praise band
is played on Palm Sunday for the entrance, and then they leave the stage during perhaps that same service, and the lament band comes in to play for the rest of the week. And then Saturday, nobody plays.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I have a good friend in town who has a blues band. I mean, an authentic, you know, stomp it out blues band. And his largest group of followers are people in the addiction recovery community.
Oh, my.
They follow him all over the place because the band tells the truth.
Yeah.
They've been there. And there's something about the passion in the thick of all of this that is freeing when we're honest.
It cries out from the heart.
It does. And the cry itself can be redemptive. So when we were at that church near Philadelphia, they wanted us to put together some music that the congregation could sing to. And so I said, okay. And I thought, we can't go wrong with Bach. So we took his chorale tune, O Sacred Head Now Wounded, and we created it or recreated it as a slow Latin kind of bossa nova and kept it in the minor key. And let's listen to a little bit of that. You'll hear the band play it out front, just a melody, and then a verse or so of the congregation coming in. When I put music like this together, I try to find harmony and also a mood that resonates with the text. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't imagine making O Sacred Head Now Wounded into like a top 40 tune.
Well, we don't want to sing it thoughtlessly. You have to meditate on the words. I have to interject that one of the most profound worship experiences I have ever had was when Richard Avery and Don Marsh had some folks in a local congregation act out O Sacred Head. They got somebody to carry a cross up the middle of the aisle. The congregation sang it more slowly than we'd ever sung it before. We had to keep telling people, slow down, slow down. It was powerful. And as you listen to that cut that you played, it's good to let the visual images of what's taking place play out.
I think so. And again, it's the deep honesty. We can't have joy without honesty. So one more little snippet of music I thought maybe we could play was a piece that was composed for that special Tenebrae on Good Friday. And it was a piece named after a place I've never located called Arimathea, you know, kind of alluding to Joseph of Arimathea, who lets Jesus borrow his tomb.
Right.
And fortunately not for long. But it's got kind of a Middle Eastern sound to it, a plaintive cry. And let me let you hear this.
Thank you. So how did that come together in your composer's mind?
Okay. It begins with some clusters. Clusters are chords that that nobody knows what they are. They're just combinations of notes with some internal tension built in, some dissonance built in. And then coming from those clusters, I began to think of what the melody might look like or sound like, who would play it. So again, I give it to a soprano sax, try to figure out how this might go. And if we ever get around to recording it for a project, we'll probably slow down the tempo a little bit. This was a little too forceful, but I think musically it accomplishes what I hoped it would do, which is to give us some time and reflection to hold together both the generosity of Joseph, who's loaning this grave to Jesus, who's now going in it. And nothing there is really resolved. It's just kind of held for a while, which is a Saturday after Holy Friday kind of feeling.
Yeah. And the musicians, when they are handed this music, they're not theologians necessarily. I guess we're all theologians in a way, but not in the studied way that a seminary graduate would be. But how does the music communicate to them so that they can communicate it to the audience?
That's a good question. We should probably ask them at some point. but I think it allows them to bring their passion and their energy and their imagination, their faithful imagination, to this performing moment as a gift for those who are hearing. And I'll be the first to admit, sometimes when we create, we leave the audience behind. Or we, you know, they don't get what we're trying to throw at them, but that's the way it is with every artistic expression.
Yeah.
And if people go back to listen on another day, they hear something entirely different. Again, it's a conversation I have sometimes in the car as the guys travel. We talk about how much do we move toward them in order to engage the audience, and how much do we express ourselves as musicians, whether or not they get it.
Yeah, and how do you keep the musicians from getting in the way of the larger work?
Right.
And when they play together with you for as long as they have, I don't think words have to be said at that point.
No. I mean, our band in one form or another has been at it for 30 years now. So we trust one another, and we welcome new voices to the musical conversation, and we bid others farewell as they move on to other challenges. But there's something at the body of the music that kind of resonates with them as people. They assure me they're not there just for the money.
Which is a good thing, because there ain't that much of it.
Not in jazz. So that's our special Holy Week edition of The Spirit of Jazz. Please know of our best wishes. And by the way, maybe this is the time we should tell our folks, you know, our next episode is going to be an episode from the road. We're going to report on our recent international tour of Eastern Virginia with the Presby Bop Quintet. So more on that next time.
Thanks for listening to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is a production of Presby Bop Music. To find out more about Presby Bop, our music, concerts, and recordings, please explore our website at www.presbybop.com. And send us a note telling us what you think about the Spirit of Jazz. We'd love to hear from you. Check in with us again next time. I'm Jeff Kellum.
And I'm Bill Carter. Thanks for tuning in.